On tonight's show, the group stages are almost done. Transfer rumours for LFC are resurfacing as all the English players head home after what Hodgie no doubt deemed a successful tournament. We look at the other early fallers and the various issues that have really caught our attention in this World Cup. We look also at those Luis Suarez rumours and the incredible sense of deja vu being experienced by us all. And we finish up discussing what we did on our fortnight off. All right, just in the bunker then tonight. No Skype, no nothing, just a room full of lads. We've got Paul Brennan, we've got Steve Daly, got Dave Thomas, got Phil Casey and myself. And we are going to talk about whatever the hell comes up. And the first thing that we're going to talk about is the World Cup, which is basically on everybody's TV. So who's catching your eye? With everything to play for going into this last round of matches, who do you fancy, Dave?
I still think that a couple of the big teams are still to come to the fore. So I think you'd be foolish to write off Argentina, particularly with, you know, Messi looking like he's gaining confidence game after game. But so far, you know, got to be impressed with the Dutch. You know, three wins. I thought the demolition of Spain was a little overcooked. You know, I think that if Silva scores his chance, it's 2-0 to Spain, and, you know, it's a different competition then. But, you know, they play great counter-attacking football. Van Gaal has impressed me. You know, he's changed his team and his tactics in every game. He's made great substitutions. So the Dutch have looked good.
That's a worry, isn't it?
It is a worry. I mean, well, yeah, but you won't have the Dutch squad at United next season, so I'm not that worried.
You might do.
We'll have Van Marlen, apparently, which is, you know, there's a real upgrade there. But of all the teams that have impressed me, I think France have been the best. I think front to back, France have looked the best team. I think they've looked defensively sound. Their midfield looks absolutely outstanding. And they've got probably the informed striker in Benzema in terms of the all-round game. So if I was a betting man, I'd either go Argentina or France.
Argentina or France. Paul, have you anything different or contradictory to that?
Yeah, France surprised me. Like, I just ignore international football basically most of the time.
That's ideal for this podcast.
It's going to make an excellent pod.
Well, you are Irish, so you know.
Well, France surprised me.
France there, Paul.
You're taking them on the merits there. France look absolutely brilliant. Like, just all around brilliant team. Holland, like, as well, like Dave says, Holland, they look really dangerous. And Van Gaal, like, he kind of gets the best out of Van Persie, which that's kind of worrying for next season. And then, yeah, Argentina have looked really kind of laboured, but Messi's still just kind of, he's still there making the difference, so... yeah, they'd have to kind of, like, they need Aguero, I think, to step up a bit more. But, like, if they get it right, then they'd be really dangerous.
So someone throws you €20, who are you going to put on?
I'd go France so far.
You go France.
The way they're playing, I think all round they look brilliant. Like,
okay.
That midfield is ridiculous.
Yeah, there's a lot of depth there.
They've Sako at the back.
Yeah,
so.
That's true. Does anyone know anything about that injury that he picked up last day? Anyone hear anything
was
more about
that?
Was
it a toy injury, was it?
Yeah, apparently he went off. I missed that particular.
He seems, that would be a concern, like, for us heading into the next season. He does seem to pick up injuries, doesn't he?
Just a bit.
It's a strange one, because, but at the same time, as the lads are saying, there's depth in that French squad.
Yeah, especially in midfield. It's incredible.
I think straight after the match, they thought he was going to be okay for their third game.
Yeah.
But I think they're gonna leave him out, I think.
I think I saw something today that he was okay. Like, he'll probably miss the third game. But they'll bring Koscielny in, and that's a pretty good... Well, all the Arsenal fans think that Koscielny should be started anyway. They're going fucking mental onto it.
They do love a bit of Koscielny, those guys.
Like,
Steve-O, now that you're back from looking at pictures of Casillas' missus, what's your...
Listen, she is delicious.
Hey, mate, nobody's blaming
delicious.
You. Nobody's blaming you. You're
lucky I'm still at not in the jacks. I'll be honest, I started out... before the tournament, I backed Germany and Spain, both 7-1, I think.
Yeah.
And then I, coming up to the France game, first match against Honduras, thing that really impressed me about them was, normally Honduras came out to absolutely brutalize them from the first minute to the last minute. They kicked seven shades of shit out of them. And the thing that really impressed me was that France didn't react. Mm-hmm. Every time they took the kick. Okay, I say that, and Pogba got booked for that little petulant kick. But you know what? If the referee had dealt with it right and seen it when he did, it could have been a red card before Pogba even picked up a yellow for it. It was a horrible stamp, and you can't nearly blame anybody for a reactionary moment like that. But straight after the game, I won a shed load of money that night, actually, because I'd backed a load of stuff in the France game.
Yeah.
6 of the 7 bets came up, and then I backed them at 16-1 after the match. They were 16-1, so I backed them. I just thought, in terms of Lloris, great keeper. Watch the back four, looked composed. Varane just looks an absolutely majestic. He's like what you used to think of Maldini. Now, maybe I'm going a little bit over the top because he still has to do a lot to reach the heights, obviously, that Maldini did.
Or Martin Kelly.
Now that you mention it, I did forget about the...
Because that's the order, right? Maldini, Martin Kelly, yeah. Everyone else.
One of the all-time worst shouts on podcast history.
But in seriousness, yeah, he looks absolutely... he looks brilliant.
I would say him and maybe Thiago Silva are the two defenders of the tournament so far.
Silva's a bit ragged.
I think he's a bit ragged.
Don't get me wrong. I would have Silva in alongside him ahead of Sacco. You know what I mean? If you were picking a back four.
But
he looked excellent. As we've all said, their midfield. And this is a midfield without Ribery.
Mm.
Yeah. You have to remember that. You're all in on France. I really like them. I'm not that pushed by Brazil. I haven't been that bothered. But I have Argentina in the sweepstake. So obviously I'm cheering for
them. If you were the world's unluckiest man and your work sweepstake came in and you thought you'd done really well, what team do you think you would have got?
Spain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you think that man is?
I would point towards yourself.
That's myself, sure. Yeah. Very nice. Phil.
And congratulations.
Thanks, mate. Who are you all in for?
It's hard to know. As a veteran of many World Cups at this stage.
Yeah, how many caps have you got?
What? World Cup caps.
As a veteran of many episodes of EastEnders.
I've been seen the 82, the 86, the 90, the 94, 98, 2002, 2006.
So you've been born for a certain number of years.
Having been alive. I watched the tournament change as we talk about what's happening now.
Hey, where are you going with this?
Hang on a second. What age are you?
37.
Mm-hmm. So.
Well, that's why I didn't say the 78.
Hang on, you've been 37. You've been 37 as long as I've known you. You're not 37.
Hang on a second, fella.
Like the Wizard
hang on
of Oz.
A second. You're not 37.
I'm 37 in Trevor years.
Well. that's fair enough.
I'm always wary about going for a team that's shown such good form and such power in the group stages. Because they never tend to actually win the actual tournaments. Mm. The ones that are impressing me are potentially Belgium and Colombia.
Right.
Because they're winning their games without being particularly brilliant. Now, I actually think Colombia have been very effective in their games. They've been ruthless in the way they've won the matches.
But they're a banana shape to win it, aren't they?
Well, you know, again, we're in South America. The stats would say to you...
We're not, you know.
Oh, we are. Can you not hear the drums outside?
Oh, yeah. Live from Rio.
Steve, he's a veteran.
It is samba time.
He's a veteran. He knows.
Fucking hell. It's a bit of a time.
Well, no, I just think, they're showing that sort of efficiency in getting through the group. They're safely through, they're winning their games, and they have the footing now to do something in the knockout stage. When you get into the knockout tournament, this knockout part of the tournament, anything can happen.
To be fair, their group was kind of pissy, though.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be jizzing my pants over at
the same time, like, you look at Spain, you would have said Spain would have cruised through that group handily enough in terms of who they were playing against, given the form that they've shown over the last 12 years or so. They have sort of stood out and said, okay, they've definitely stood up for their tags of dark horses in the tournament, as France have done as well, because France have been very efficient, ruthless in the way they've done it. So I've no issues there in saying that France have looked good.
What was your group again? The dark horses group?
The dark horses group was the French. France, and I thought
you were dark horses. It's good work by you.
I know, yeah. And their jerseys. The jerseys
have been amazing. That kit is magic.
The French normally have a decent
kit. That zip up top they wear out.
But the Brazilians they've been shown out that they're playing a bit like Chelsea in the way that they've got. Like, they aren't the free-flowing Brazilian teams that we're used to. And Scolari's team in 2002 wasn't a free-flowing
Brazilian
team.
They've got no forward.
No, they don't. And that could ultimately be their undoing. But at the same time, all it takes is Fred or one of them to get on a run of goals in the knockout stages, and then they're in the final.
Better chance of Fred Flintstone scoring a fucking goal.
You know, he is a coward.
No, but, you know, this is what I'm saying. Like, those teams are making their way through the groups, and when they get into the knockout stages, that's when potentially start seeing performances being put in.
This is kind of leading us on to the next little thing I want to talk about. What's the story with impressive teams or so-called big teams and the way they're struggling in their second match? Well, what do you think that's about?
See, that I was going to mention Germany, because the first game they were just unbelievable. Mm. But the amount of running that they did in that game, it seemed to really affect them in the second game, and they couldn't put the same level of energy into the actual match itself. And I think the conditions are probably being not talked about as much as they should be in terms of the way teams are actually performing. So some teams are coping with the conditions definitely better than the others. And I'm not quite sure how... I think, like, you're looking at, say, Holland. They weren't that impressive in their game against Australia. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? They destroyed Spain in the first one. They were very good against Chile again today.
Italy too.
And managed to get through, scrape by in the actual Australia game. Italy.
I didn't see all of the Australia game, but does that come down to the Australians being similar to the Americans in just having an absolute winning mentality? They know they're not going to really achieve anything, but they go out there and they will give it their all for 90 minutes.
Set up well,
and
yeah.
To be fair, Spain bent over. They did. Yeah. You know what I mean? There's no doubt in that. They just didn't. They went 2-3-0, or well, sorry, 2-3-1 down. That was it. Game over. They just didn't want to know about it anymore. It was just like, get us off this pitch. Whereas the Australians weren't. Against Chile, they didn't do that.
No.
Against I didn't see the match tonight now, but against Holland, for the bits of the game that I saw, they didn't do that either.
A great show, yeah.
Yeah,
but I genuinely think the conditions are affecting some of the teams, and I think we've seen even Argentina. They looked so laboured in their second match there. Like, you know, they struggled to get that win against against who was it again? Algeria.
Oh my Christ, this is
Iran.
Edit.
Hang on a second. They struggled to get that win against Iran. and it takes a bit of brilliance from Messi right at the death to win the actual match. And in fairness, Messi had a
there wasn't
very
too much
quiet
brilliance
game.
Before
he
that, no.
Being very, very quiet.
But the other thing is, as well, you know, part of it could be that they don't need to win the second game. You win the first game. You probably only need a draw in the second game, then you win the third. Or, you know, you go through a stop. So 4 points gets you through.
Yeah.
So I think if you win the first game, I think mentally everyone goes a little bit more conservative in the second game and says, okay, well, look, let's just, let's play for the draw.
Listen, before we go any further, there's something that's been on my mind about this tournament since it started. I just want to throw it out there and see what you guys think. I keep hearing this phrase, at this level. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to compete at this level. And it's sticking in my craw, because as far as I can see, the level that we're watching, it's much lower than the top end of the Premier League. It's much lower than Champions League. You're talking about teams that are put together in journeymen, owl lads, young lads.
It's just a cliche.
It's nonsense.
It's a cliche that was relevant up to, say, the 1994 World
Cup. It's accepted wisdom.
Now, yeah, I know.
It's nonsense.
It's you know what it is. It's they may as well say, you know, to compete when you've thrown these bunch of lads together 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because that's truthfully what it is.
Well, it is.
It's like asking people to play the FA Cup within the first four weeks of the season. Mm. You know what I mean? I know that's a silly analogy, but I'm just saying it's like asking, or it's like starting, you know, the starting the Champions League in August and not having that gap, running it right. You know, and even at that's not even relevant. Because
well, in a nutshell, if you want to look at it in a nutshell, it's the difference between Henderson and Gerrard and someone else, and Henderson and Gerrard and someone else when they're playing for Liverpool and playing for England.
No, we'll deal with that later, but it's not though.
Absolutely.
In terms of the way it's set up.
That's my point.
It's your managers and stuff like that.
That's my point. Like, and that's all to do with the level.
I still think, look, when the top teams play each other, it's elite level football. It's probably
Champions League.
Yeah, it's your knockout stages of Champions League, because it's the same players who are involved in the Champions League. But as Steve said, there's a valid point that you don't get the intensity in a 4 week tournament that you get over when a competition is spread over 6 or 7 months.
And the funny thing is, you nearly should get more intensity in a 4 week tournament, because it's it's all or nothing in those four weeks, but it's
in theory,
not. Yeah. It's, you know, well, it's an anti-climax every time for me personally. You know,
although this is a good one, right?
A great World Cup.
This is a good
one
tournament,
of the best in a long time.
I don't
necessarily. I think that's overused at the minute. Now, how amazing this World Cup is. Yeah, I do. Like, you know what I mean? You've watched an Iran Ireland style against Russia team put their backs to the wall against Argentina. You know, okay, Germany Ghana was a good game.
I think I've only been bored twice, Dave. And that's not bad. Like, I've seen a lot of matches.
I've liked a lot. Watching England. I don't like international football generally.
Yeah,
you haven't been watching many of the fucking 11 o'clock games at night, have you? Then,
well, no, actually, that's a good shout.
My God, how I've stayed awake for them.
Yeah, a lot of the late ones.
Korea against fucking.
But they're obviously tired because it's 11 o'clock at night. Like.
Well, that's true. Yeah. This is what you're paid the big bucks for, these kind of fucking insights. Paul, you said
at this level. Korea-Russia it was.
Yeah.
That was one thing.
That was shocking.
Yeah, but
turgid shit.
Like, again, you're going to have bad games with so many games going on. It's just, it's a matter of mathematics.
Yeah,
I think the reason why this tournament is probably, people have enjoyed it more than normal is because there's a lot more goals being scored. And that's more down to shit defending than it is to necessarily brilliant football. Mm. But like, once you get a tournament with loads of goals going on, there's always something happening, and there's always the likelihood of a mistake that's going to lead to a goal. And that's why it's more enjoyable. Think back to the 94 World Cup, when teams basically just set up like rugby teams and fucking
break us down.
And it was long ball and everything, and it was disgusting. Yeah. Like, it was one of the worst World Cups I can remember. Even the 02 World Cup was a shit.
There's the kickoff times as well, you have to remember. People are enjoying it because the first game's at 5 o'clock. So most people are getting home to see at least the second half of the game, and then they're getting they're getting to see more of it.
Yeah.
So they feel like it's a better World Cup. You know what I mean? Like, if you've got games at 2 o'clock, you're catching the highlights, or you're catching a bit of it because you were in work or whatever it may be. I think just the timing of the games in this World Cup has been absolutely spot on.
I think it is a better World Cup, though. I mean, certainly better than in 2010.
Yeah, I didn't like.
You know, and I think that I think one of the reasons it's proven so enjoyable is that there are genuine surprises. Like, nobody saw Spain going out.
Nope.
You know, nobody really saw Chile come in. You know what I mean? Nobody
Costa Rica
saw
shock,
Costa Rica.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody saw Ghana taking Germany on. I mean, you know, these are, and that's part of the beauty of international football is, you know, unless you're someone, you know, and we all know people like this who claim to stay up all night watching every type of football game ever.
There's always some wank,
you know,
in that
there's always some person on Twitter who's seen everyone all the time, all the time. You know, we don't know about these players. You know, now, you know, the coaches should know about these players, but we don't know about some of these teams that are turning up. And, you know, we don't know about the left back from fucking Costa Rica who turns out
well,
to be
you
a
don't, Dave. You
well,
don't.
I don't.
Some
yeah,
people
exactly.
Do.
I, you know, some I have people. Have other things to do, like
some
sleep.
People might.
But there's more surprises, I guess, is my point. So I think that's what's exciting about it. And I think we forget as well, because there's so much time in between tournaments, I think we forget that these things do happen in World Cups. You do get surprises.
What about that shout that Phil had there about the standard of the goals being mostly down to bad defending? I can think of Jones's goal for America. I can think of Messi's hit. I can't think of too many other outstanding individual wonderful hits. Cahill's volley.
Terrible.
Oh, Cahill's is magical.
Cahill's volley.
Well, you must be having a cardiac with all the goalkeeping errors that's going on. I mean, there's not a good goalkeeper.
Surprisingly, right, for the actual good goalkeepers are really standing out in the tournament. Like, I'm really impressed with Claudio Bravo and goal for Chile.
Ochoa.
I always thought Ochoa.
Iker Casillas is having the crack. What the fuck is going on?
Have you
on
seen
there?
His misses? I wouldn't give a fuck about any goals I can get. He's going, I am not spending another day here when I could be fucking that.
I tell you, in that Korea-Russia game, did you see, is it Akinfeev?
Yes.
Did you see him?
Oh my God.
That's splendid.
That's up there with the Nigeria OG before the game, before the World Cup.
You look at the top goalkeepers are really, and because of the mistakes, they are really standing out. Like, you know, the ones who are comfortable coming for crosses, who are good with their feet, they look so many levels above the other goalkeepers in the tournament that you realise how important a really good goalkeeper
you mentioned that Ochoa fella before as a bit of a nutter, did you, or am I getting that wrong?
No, you did. I said
you mentioned him as backup.
I said he will be great competition
ago.
And I said at the time we were going for him and Mignolet, and I think the price being quoted for him at that time was £5 million.
And who's he with?
Jassio in France. That is, and he's out of contract now.
Now, I know we're going to talk about this later on, but that's one of the massive flaws of the TV coverage is they don't say the name of the bloody club that the player's with. And to get back to what Dave's saying, that's a real flaw for me. Like, I don't know who these guys are or who they're with.
Ochoa is an unorthodox goalkeeper, but he's been like Mexico's number one for a good while at this stage. Right? And you're not a bad goalkeeper if you're number one for your country, bar the fellas who are shit.
Bar all the ones that are
solid analysis.
Excellent theory.
At this level, though, you are right. Yeah, to be a goalkeeper at this level.
At this level,
it wasn't surprising the game that he had against Brazil because he's capable of that. I remember watching Jassio against PSG in Jordan the year, and he had an absolute blinder that night. PSG did absolutely everything. He was just stopping stuff that he'd no right to stop.
Do you watch the French football a lot?
What a mental goalkeeper, yeah. Just stopping stuff.
No, but like,
using his hands.
But a bit like Mignolet when he makes those incredible saves that he has no right to get to. He's capable of that. I just think, again, if you're comparing goalkeepers, you know.
Does he catch a ball outside the 6-yard box?
He does. But look, if you want one of the best footballing goalkeepers in the World Cup, you're looking at your man Claudio Bravo for Chile. When you look at the way he's playing, if you were going to say who would be your archetypal sort of Barcelona type goalkeeper in the World Cup, he's your man. The way he's so comfortable with the ball at his feet, the way he's able to play it out, and he's been brilliant coming for it. Like, he's dominated the area as well. So yeah, look, some great goalkeepers, some really shit goalkeepers. World Cup's great.
Apart from the keepers, Paul, you're saying that you're enjoying this unusually, given that you don't really like international football. Who's standing out for you? Is it just the obvious? Is it Suarez?
Yeah, basically, yeah. It's like the likes of himself. fuck off.
No, do.
Sorry. Let's add that again.
Yeah, okay.
Suarez. No, obviously, then, like, what he did to England was just absolutely brilliant. Like, there's just, it's that, you know, the vine going around of Hodgson? Because there's a lot of kind of.
There's so many of them.
That vine.
You mean the one where he just puts his head down? Yeah, like he's just.
Because there's a lot of debate over this, like, whether he's kind of looking at Rooney scoring, like, missing a chance, or whether it's, like, that's his actual reaction. Like, you know, smiling as Suarez is bearing down on goal and smashes it in, and then, someone flips his off switch and it just kind of shuts down. Yeah, that was another highlight. But yeah, Suarez, Van Persie was brilliant against Spain. I didn't see much of the Australia game, and Messi, I think he could click into gear.
Yeah,
he looked a bit kind of disinterested, but I think he could in the knockouts.
Outside of Messi,
Robin,
and Robin, yeah.
Oh, I've asked this question a few times, even in when we've been watching Champions League and stuff. How did Chelsea let him go so many years ago? Well, I know the actual.
Well, he went to Real Madrid, didn't he? So.
Yeah, but still, you know what I mean? Like,
how did Madrid let him go?
Yeah, you know what I mean? Then why didn't Chelsea buy him back? You know what I mean? Like, I know he went to Bayern Munich. Like, it's not like he's been going to shit clubs, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, the lad has seemed like he was 35 for the last 10 years, and he's still only, whatever, 32 now.
He does look like,
he's got a speed record or something, didn't he?
He's like that. That was everybody banged on about Bale, that goal against Atletico that he scored. Atletico, wasn't it, that he scored the goal? When he went around the outside, he fucking went into the dugout and up over the first row of the stands and back onto the pitch again. But like that goal that Robin scored against Spain, the speed of him is just electrifying. And I just love watching him play.
He's 30, like, Steve. I think he looks the fittest player on that team.
I love him. I tell you, if I know it's not going to happen, but for Liverpool to sign somebody, when we're talking about, you know, sort of that wing forward kind of player, I would absolutely love us to sign him.
Yeah. So for you, he's the outstanding.
Yeah, for me, he's been the player I've enjoyed watching most so far. I have to say, yet again, nothing may be spectacular, but I've just really enjoyed watching France play. I think fair play to Deschamps, because there doesn't seem to be the ego there. Doesn't seem to be anything.
I think even French fans are surprised by the standard of some of the people, like the performance of Sissoko the other night. People were taken aback by that. This kid, what's the guy we were linked with, the other midfielder,
Matuidi.
He, like, you know, I think French people themselves are genuinely surprised by the standard of these guys. They seem to have an immense depth there. But what about you, Dave? Is there anyone standing out for you?
Outside of the bigger teams which obviously, you know, we've all kind of talked about. I think, to be fair, Clint Dempsey has had a very good World Cup. Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. He scored a great goal in the first game, played well for the United States have actually looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Your man Blackendecker's been going for them as well.
Yeah. And I...
Was that the dreadlock chap?
Yeah, the fellow with the dreadlock chap.
I think even watching the Ghana game against Germany, I mean, I thought that their athleticism in the final third was unbelievable. I mean, you know, Germany have played really well as well. Muller, you know, he's probably going to be...
Muller's he's such an intelligent forward, isn't he? Like, in reality, he's incredibly intelligent.
He looks like he's a painter and decorator. He doesn't look like a footballer.
Like, what are you going to say?
Steve was talking about Robin there. Muller's my shout for the dream signing from this World Cup. That's who I want. Mm. I'd say anyone.
And he looks like the alphabet killer out of Beverly Hills Cop 2 as well.
That's a wonderful shout.
Can you imagine, like, nearly every decent footballer at this World Cup, Damo Flood's been shouting how much he hates them.
Yeah.
That Muller's good. He's a prick. what do you think of Robin? He's only a cunt. Okay, now I'm
into the Lucas basket, which he
is. Ben Seaman's looking really good as well now that he's not fat anymore.
He is the French Ronaldo, isn't he? Like, in terms of, you know, when he's trim and all, he's just, he's explosive. He has that same sort of stride.
Like Fat Ronaldo.
No, yeah, the real one.
Yeah, real Ronaldo. Yeah.
Actual Ronaldo.
For me, James Rodriguez off Colombia.
Yes.
I thought he's been absolutely excellent.
James.
Yeah.
Did you think so in the first game?
I love that.
Yeah, well...
The first Colombian game, fair enough, like, he was reasonable, but they, you know, I think they were lucky to win that first match, to be honest with you. You know, second game, he ran the show, to be fair to him, and he does look a signing. That's what it was. He was part of the Moutinho deal, wasn't he?
Or
I was thinking to myself earlier on, what were the ones that RTE were fucking up on, and they were talking about how he was part of the Falcao.
Most of them.
The Falcao.
How he was part of the Falcao deal, and I was just going, boys, it was a year before that he signed for them. He's been playing a season longer than Falcao.
Wasn't he, he's all part of that George Mendes connection. Like, that's where Falcao is there. Moutinho's at Monaco. You've got James Rodriguez.
That's an agent, is it?
He's the super agent. He's Mourinho's agent as well. Ronaldo's agent.
He's the fellow who sorted out that Bebe to United.
Yeah.
He's a legend, isn't he?
Which is meant to be
having the crack.
I've got this great lad. Bebe, wait till you see him. He's up there with Sonny Anderson.
Dave, Miroslav Klose. What are you thinking? Can he possibly go on if the team goes on to blitz this record altogether?
I mean, Klose,
like, he's still the man for them in many ways.
Well, he is and he isn't. Do you know what I mean? He's the man if you need someone to goal hang. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm. 6 yards away from goal and stick a leg out. I mean, he's made a career, you know, statistically you can't argue with a guy. But he's probably the worst good footballer I've ever seen.
Yeah. I mean, the hatching back.
Well, I'd say he couldn't.
He took Inzaghi's crown, did he?
He's Inzaghi,
but
without the pace. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He's like Inzaghi.
But with less offsides.
With less offsides, but less about him. I'm just, you know, I actually think it would be a bit sad if he ended up being, he is the joint top scorer, right?
Yeah.
You know, and if he ended up being the outright joint top scorer.
But for a 52-year-old, it's fucking fierce impressive what he's getting on.
I mean, considering he's 10 years younger than Trev, I think he's doing pretty well.
He's doing all right, the kid.
I know, but in all seriousness, I mean, to have that longevity in a team like Germany, who, you know, let's be honest, they're not short on
talent. He's not Robbie
Keane,
is what you're saying.
He's playing for Germany, he's gone to the World Cup, and he scored. You know, you've got to take your hat off to him.
I think what Klose does really well is that the German team sometimes look like a team that needs a striker, because if you think of the way, like, say, the Dortmund set up
focal point wise,
because all of a sudden all the good play that they have around the box, it's exactly as I say, when the ball goes in there, he's there, he's ready for a rebound, he's ready to get on the end of the thing, and that's where he gets so many of his, even his goal, like, again the other night, you know, it's like that Solskjaer goal from the 99 Cup final,
it's instinct,
it's just following it in.
Well, it was heading in anyway, wasn't it? He kind of steams in, that's mine.
A severe hint to Craig Johnson off him in the 86 FA Cup final, when he don't go bailing again, this one.
He's like a special teams player in American football, you know what I mean? He's the type of, you know, if we played like that in football, you'd say for the last 7 minutes you throw him on and you'd say don't move from there, because we're just going to throw all these balls in the
box. That's what he did
You know, that's the type of player he is, but he doesn't fit into any modern starting system. Do you know what I mean? So you couldn't imagine a player like that coming along again.
Would you hate, if you're playing against them, you'd hate to see him coming off the bench.
Because you know,
it just sets fear into the team. It's like,
here's a goal. Bollocks. Here's a goal.
That's your man again.
Worst celebration ever, though. You know, tried to do a somersault, landed on his ass. You know what I mean?
Fucking broke his neck. The only man to equal the record and fucking be paralysed at the same time.
Unfortunate. Look, we're kind of skirting around the issue here. I suppose we've spoken about a few players here individually. There are a lot of them who are, we've already said, we would like. There are a lot of them who are actually being overtly linked to Liverpool. Of those players, who do we think is impressed? I suppose we start off with the obvious one that all the talk about is today, Alexis Sanchez. Anyone any strong opinions about this kid?
Well, Sanchez, before he went to the World Cup, was already a player that everyone knew. So, you know, he filled a void when Messi was injured for Barcelona this season. He's a top-class player, like, you know what I mean? He's 25, so he still has 3-4 years more progression to go. And you can see him, even watching tonight against Holland, if anything was going to happen, it was going to happen through Sanchez in terms of what was going on for Chile. So, like, to be linked with him, regardless of what people think, like, to be linked with him, it's a great... a sign of where we've come to now, that we're now in the market for that type of player.
Doesn't it also speak to a horrible reality that if we are going to be linked with that kid, the likelihood is there's somebody going in the opposite direction that we don't want to really talk about?
Well, I know we're going to talk about it later, but like, you know, it's all what's ifs and whens until something happens. But like, we're talking about players who've impressed us, who have been rumoured targets. Again, you could say the same for Varane being included in a deal that would see him going to Real Madrid. It's been talked that Liverpool were interested in him because he would fill a phenomenal void.
Steve-O just came there.
No, but like, you know, if you had Sacco and Varane as your centre-back partnership,
holy shit,
like, that, you know, that's immense. You know what I mean? Immediately your defence is a lot stronger for than what it is at this moment in time. There's loads of right backs. Every single right back in the World Cup has been
easy. We're going to come to Johnson. I can see you working away at that. Oh, let's talk about right backs.
Your way up to it.
All right. Even Sampaoli, the Chile manager, has been brilliant at right back.
So,
do you see the amount of touchline covering he's been doing? That's just been fantastic.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's very mobile.
And he's fit looking as well.
I heard he can defend a crossfield ball as well. Sanchez is excellent, and he's been excellent in the two games that I've seen him in so far. The one thing I'd say is I'm actually wondering why people are so worried about players going in the opposite direction. You know, we're now in a position whereby someone doesn't have to go in the opposite direction for us to sign a player of that calibre.
Yeah.
And they shouldn't be going in the opposite direction for us to sign someone of that calibre.
Yeah.
You know, this is the season when we've done everything. When I say we, I had very little to do with it, to be fair.
You were giving Brendan tips during the
year.
The team have done everything that could have been asked of them in terms of expectations from the board and more. Okay, so forget about the fact that we lost the league very late in the season. That was just an added bonus, and it's still a disappointment that it happened. But the truth is, we finished second, guaranteed qualification with the Champions League. Qualifying or anything like that in terms of pre-rounds. This has to be when the manager is backed with the type of money and type of quality that has been promised by them since day one. You know what I mean? We haven't been able to deliver Champions League football since they came in. And that's fair enough. So no one could expect the sort of output on transfers during that time. If any of us that were expecting that sort of mad money to be spent were just delusional. It was hope rather than reality. Which
leads us to a situation where we now have a little bit of hope that money will be spent. And we can talk about those transfer targets a little bit later. But in terms of just the area we're talking about there,
players
apart from Sanchez,
is there
anybody else that has been overtly linked to the club? I mean,
Muller. Yeah. But you know, Benzema, absolutely.
But these are all fanciful ones. I mean, there are actually been tangible rumours about it.
Well, I'm going to be controversial and say that I think Lovren's played pretty well.
And that is controversial.
I don't give a fuck, really. But you know, we've been linked with him. He was his first game in a tournament he plays against Brazil, right? Thought he did okay. He wasn't spectacular. Second game, he was pretty good, actually. I thought and the thing I like about him is he's really vocal, and he's an organizer at the back. He is the leader at the back. And I think of all the characteristics that Brendan's looking for a centre half, that's the big one, that he wants them to be able to organise and to be able to coordinate the back four. The other person who I don't think we've been overtly linked with, but I think has had a pretty good tournament so far, is Griezmann from France.
Yeah, that was an old one.
Oh my God, we should be all over that.
Just two things there. Listen, I know we haven't necessarily been overtly linked with players, but it's been a lot of speculation on Twitter by people who frankly probably don't have a clue. They're just speculating and having a guess and hoping that their rumour takes off.
So they can get lots of retweets and favourites
and whatever it may be. But, you know, the truth is, you said there, Trev, realistic targets.
Yeah.
You know, when I said Muller or Sanchez or
that's Benzema. Me being pessimistic. I know what you're saying.
And to me, that's where we have to be now. You know what I mean? Because we've had a few years in the doldrums, you know what I mean? We're now saying, oh, well, you know, Lovren should be, not a guarantee, but it should be like the Ricky Lambert deal. It should be, if we want Lovren and we want to pay the money, then he's ours. Yeah. That should be the approach nearly now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When we were at the height of our pomp in the Benitez era, if we'd had the money, we'd have signed David Silva. We'd have signed, you know what I mean, the other...
Who are the great Aguero. Of the time.
You know what I mean? Those players that were, you know, really just about to hit the very peak of their career, we'd have signed them if we'd had the money and the backing to do it at the time. And we're back there now, in my opinion. Being back in Champions League and with a manager that players have to be looking at the way we play football. I don't care whether you're in La Liga, whether you're in Serie A, whether you're in the Bundesliga. Mm. You have to be looking at the way Liverpool are playing football.
The thing with Lovren for me, though, is like I'm looking at him and I didn't see anything in the games that Sacco hasn't done in the game that he played for France. I'm looking at him. I don't know people aren't his biggest fan, but when I look at Lovren, I'm looking at Agger. You know what I mean? I'm looking at the same level of player. So I don't see... the step up that we're talking about that's going to, you know, come in and solidify his place in the first team necessarily.
And who represents that? Is it someone of the standard of Varane who might...
For me, I'm saying, like, right, if we're going to replace somebody in the back four, we've already got Saka who's probably going to be the starting left centre-back because, you know, given who he is and the amount of money we spent on it. And it's then who's going to play alongside him? Is it going to be Skrtel? And we've all said throughout the year that, you know, the partnership didn't seem to function well. Mm. So then you're looking at, okay, who's the most impressive right centre-backs that you've seen in the actual tournament? And that's what I was sort of saying, right, if Lovren comes in, it's just another... of the same that we have. Mm. You don't need to sell
Agger. He's a left centre-back.
Well, unless he plays Lovren right centre-back.
But Lovren's played all his games at left centre back.
He has played at right centre back.
I know, but he is mainly, and even at Southampton, he mainly played at left centre back. So I'm saying my thing on it is that who are we looking at and who are we linked with that's actually going to improve what we have? And that's why when I started talking about Sanchez would improve the squad. You know, we've been linked with Pedro. I don't think Pedro is going to improve our squad. In fact, I don't think Pedro will do well in the Premiership.
I don't get that anymore.
Because he was even lightweight in the World Cup.
I don't think the Pedro link.
He's a Bojan. That's exactly what he is.
You know, and I think he's a quality player in the Barcelona setup. Mm. But we don't play like Barcelona.
Mm. Yeah.
We play more like a German side than we play like Barcelona. And Pedro wouldn't get into the German side the way they play.
I mean, at the end of the day, if who he wants, and it is Lovren, then sign Lovren.
Yeah.
If who he wants is Lallana, then sign Lallana.
Yeah.
Because I would rather he sign players that he played than sign players who sit on a bench and don't do anything.
Mm.
And on the right centre-back piece, Varane aside, right, there's no obvious candidate for me.
And I don't think, I'm the one saying we should sign Mullers or we should sign Benzema's or whatever. I don't think Varane is actually a viable opportunity for us because the point is Benzema, you know, if they go and sign a world-class striker, it's not Bale or Ronaldo's going to fall the victim there. I think it's going to be probably Benzema. So all of a sudden you're signing that player that's not quite getting in at first. Same with Muller. You know, he's played, what, 25, 30 games? I know that's how Guardiola has done his squad. Most players haven't played 40 games this season. But yet again, it's a player that's not a guaranteed name on the team sheet.
He starts in all the big games for Bayern Munich. So, like, I don't see...
Plus, they've lost Mandzukic now.
Yeah, so and I think Muller is...
But they've gained...
They've gained Lewandowski.
But I still think Muller plays in the three behind him because they know what Muller brings, intelligence, and he can play across that front three and he just scores goals. I can't see Bayern Munich letting Muller go.
No, neither can I.
I can see them letting Cruz go, but I can't see them letting Muller go.
But going back to the right centre-back, right? So...
Who else? Varane, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Apart from Varane... Who's out there that we go, that's a great right centre back?
Gary Medel.
Yes.
Well, I'd buy him for the midfield.
And he's mad.
I would not.
Yeah, you're a fan, aren't you?
I'm a huge fan of Medel. And I think he's brilliant at right centre back for Chile.
What would we do
with him? What's brilliant about him? He got outjumped by a shrew. Tim Cahill outjumped him and planted a header.
In fairness, Tim Cahill would outjump probably most lads with a lad on the shoulder. Seriously, are there any realistic targets?
Well, it goes back to the point we were making. Defending in a World Cup is terrible.
Yeah, but we're talking about players we were linked with, as opposed to, you know, just picking out random players off the opposition. So, like, you look at Shaqiri. Shaqiri hasn't had a good World Cup for Switzerland. Mm. But I would still sign him because of the... No, you can't judge a player on a
because
World Cup.
Because you've seen what he's done before.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, this is what... People also get lulled into this romance of the World Cup. Remember fucking Sally fucking Joe and El Hadji Juff.
Yeah, listen...
And what they did when they came.
Let's be honest, if you were looking at this World Cup not knowing who Cristiano Ronaldo was, you'd go, he's a bag of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, no, that's fair. And lots of players that have been like that. You know what I mean? Like Aguero. You would never sign Sergio Aguero. You'd say, look at that lazy cunt. There's no way I want him near my team.
Yeah, but at the same time, we're talking about who of the players that we're linked with, who have stood out. And in reality, very few of them have.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's...
But that's the truth. The very few players have stood out. Mm. So, you know what I mean? Even if we'd been linked with some of the absolute top talent in Europe, they still haven't stood out in this tournament.
But the very fact that Messi was in the talk there, the conversation for who might be the best player in the World Cup, simply because he scored two effective goals.
Well, I don't think he has been before.
But the World Cup is not a scouting forum, right?
No.
That's the reality of it. Mm. Which it goes back to what Steve say, just sign a player as Rodgers wants. I don't think his mind is going to change either way based on what happens in the World
Cup.
Listen,
the fact that he's on holidays with his bird rather than in Rio, you know what I mean, or was anyway, says in itself that he's not that bothered by
He knows who he wants. I'd say we've got plan A, which is Suarez staying, and we've got plan B, which is Suarez going. And I think that he's very clear on what he wants, and the club should back him. And everyone can have an opinion, but I guarantee you nobody has seen these players more than the professional scouts who work for the club
And Brendan Rodgers, being the man, how meticulous he is in his preparation, he has to have seen whatever's come his way and absolutely drilled into that.
Speak to me, Phil, about Messi's countryman, Maradona, Maradona.
Diego.
and the things he's been coming out with. What's your take on it?
It started off after the Costa Rica match when he slaughtered FIFA for drug testing 7 of them, saying that they were picking on the Costa Rican team and picking on the smaller teams and the whole lot. Then I can't remember what the guy's name, who's the head of the Argentinian FA, said that Maradona was a jinx to Argentina on the back of Maradona left before Messi scored the winner against Iran. And
what's his relationship like with your man Sabella?
Is it bad with the manager?
Yeah.
Well, Maradona thinks he should be managing the Argentina team. He said it before the World Cup as well. So, like, you know, this Argentine team would win the World Cup if I was manager for them. So,
the last time.
I mean, like, that was terrifying to watch.
I think Diego's back on the gear, to be honest.
But he was on Venezuelan television. And there was a comment put.
I guarantee it. The bird that was on show, it, right?
He said, "So how do you respond to being a jinx?" And he just gave the finger to the camera.
Oh, quite bad. Says,
I give that to the fucking Argentinian FA. That was
really?
It. Yeah. Maradona's on fire for this World Cup. I'd love to see him. Imagine him in the studio on RTE or something. It'd be fucking brilliant.
Is the Argentinian dumb for you? Like, if you take him with a pinch of salt, he's just great to watch.
Where's Pelé? Why isn't Pelé coming out with an odd little shout? Like, I mean, Homeland and all the rest of it. What's going on?
Pelé is just a soundbite. You know what I mean? And there's nothing.
But wouldn't you imagine he'd be rolled out?
He's not actually that. I say, you know, take this with a pinch of salt. But he's not the most popular Brazilian player. Like, I read a great article, I think it was in The Guardian or something, that if you were to go to different parts of Brazil and ask him who the best player, you know, in the history was, none of them would say Pelé.
They'd say
Garrincha, or they'd say Jorginho, or they'd say Zico, depending on which part of the country they went to. You know, so he's more
very
respected.
Parochial.
It's parochial.
It is very parochial.
So if you go to... whereas outside of... Brazil. Mm. You know, Pele's kind of a bit of a spokesman for FIFA, but inside Brazil, he's not really that much of a figure.
It is a shocker not to see him doing
it. I think
he'll be there, though, until the final.
As soon as Blatter starts appearing, Pele will start appearing. Exactly.
Through Dave's whole piece there, I've got a whole little Skinner and Badil thing going on in my head, just going, Pele's a cunt, Pele's a cunt. I just wanted to do a little backlap for Dave while he told that story with that singing in the background.
My favourite Maradona quote was when they asked him about Messi versus Neymar, and he said, well, Messi's better than Neymar. Sorry, Neymar's the new Pele and Messi's the new Maradona. And just like I was better than Pele, Messi's better than Neymar.
Job done. Pele's every bit as arrogant as Maradona, whereas Maradona's just like he has this kind of larger than life kind of aura about him. But Pele, like, you listen to him talk and it's unbelievable just like the regard he holds himself
it's
in.
It's remarkable.
And like it's pure like, do you reckon anyone could be at your level? Oh no. No, I was
clearly
the one. Fuck off. Absolute shithouse.
He refers to himself in the third person.
Yeah.
When he's talking about himself, sometimes he says, you know, people think, could they be like Pele?
But Pele says no. Okay, look, it would be remiss of us not to speak about England to some extent or other.
We have a round of applause for England, lads.
The delusion continues.
I'm standing against this.
But why? Look, they're out. Are you surprised?
I'm really, really disappointed.
I'm disappointed too.
Like, I'm genuinely...
No. I'm on record saying I wanted them to get through. Oh. And I cheered when Sturridge scored, but I also cheered when the opposition scored, because I'm a bit psychotic like that.
Why did you want them doing it?
Because I really, really like them and they're
I'm sorry, Steve, but what overrides this what overrides this whole fucking thing with England is Hodgson. Now, you can't get away from the fucking delusion of the English press. You can't get away from the excuses that are already putting out for the cunt. You know, this man is an abhorrence in football.
I don't hate Hodgson.
He's a fucking wanker and he needs to be sent off to the Amazon to be fucking lost.
Did I hate Hodgson when he was at Liverpool? Yes. Did I want him out of the club? Yes. Did I give a fuck about Roy Hodgson and his life before Liverpool? No. Do I give a fuck about Roy Hodgson and his life after Liverpool? No.
But that doesn't fit with your theory about wanting to see England do well. So surely then, if they've got this,
I don't care about Fabio Capello either. You know what I mean? But I still wanted them to do well when he was managing them. Same with Sven-Göran Eriksson. I don't give a shit about their.
I know,
managers.
But your team, your chosen team, have got this absolute impediment leading them.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm disappointed by that, but this isn't... Nobody at this table is hating Hodgson because he's leading England out of the World Cup. Let's call a spade here. You're all hating Hodgson because you all think he's a cunt and hate him from his time as Liverpool
manager.
That's not why I dislike him. I dislike him because I think he's outdated with his tactics. I don't even dislike him. I just nothing him. You know what I mean? If he dropped dead tomorrow, I wouldn't give a shit. You know what I mean? Genuinely, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest. But I really am disappointed that England have gone out, and I thought they should and could have done better.
Anyone else in the room agree with Steve Willer? I know I do to an extent.
I don't hate Hodgson for taking England out of the World Cup. I love Hodgson for taking England out of the World Cup.
Are you delighted they're gone?
Of course I am.
Genuinely.
Yeah, but why would I?
Well, I'm Irish. I see your point, but would you not like to have seen the sideshow go on?
No, I don't think first of all, right, there's a couple of things here. There's no correlation between how Liverpool players do with England and how they do with Liverpool, right? So this theory that we should want Liverpool players to do well with England because they'll bring it back to their clubs is nonsense. We won 3 European Cups between 1977 and 1984 and England were fucking awful, right? So there's no correlation between Liverpool players doing well with England and Liverpool players doing well at home. The second thing is as well, just read any article that's been written in the last month about England and the World Cup, either before they went or while they were there or since they've come back, and the level of delusion that they have around in both directions. So before the World Cup, they started to build up to the fact that they could get to a semi-final. Alan Shearer, if we got a bit of luck, we'd get to a semi-final. Now they're out of the World Cup. All of a sudden, all these players are terrible. The players aren't good enough. I read an article today that, you know, the bottom line is the players gave their all, but they're not good enough. I'm sorry, right? But that team that he put out against both Italy and Uruguay, that's a very, very good team. That's a very good team full of very good players.
Is there perspective to the articles that you're reading? Is it Alan Shearer saying they can get to the semi-final and then Alan Shearer saying the players aren't good
enough? No.
So like that's like saying I read an article from this Italian fella who said Hitler was fucking grey crack. And then they lost the war and this other Italian fella wrote this article and said Hitler was an awful bollocks. You know what I mean? That's
Sarah Palin once said, I read all the magazines, right? Yeah. I get my news from a wide variety of sources, okay? You know, I don't just read Alan Shearer. He just happens to be the first thing I read.
I actually felt that this is the first tournament in a long time that the English media didn't overhype.
But Hodgson's done that, right? He brought
it all
the way down.
Yeah, that's him.
And then they started to build
up. He was right to bring it all the way down.
They lost Italy, right? Yeah. They played well.
Which they were unlucky to do.
Hang on a minute. They played well for 40 minutes out of his 2-year tenure,
mm-hmm.
right? And in every single article I've written...
Well, that's not true. They didn't play well for 40 minutes out of his 2-year tenure or else they wouldn't have qualified.
Okay, let me rephrase it then. They played attacking football for 40 minutes.
Well, who says attacking football is the right football?
But that's what they're writing about him. That's what you've asked me which articles I'm reading. Every article says that he's got England on the right path and he's playing attacking football and giving youth a chance, which is bollocks.
Exactly, because at the heart of that central thesis is something very wrong. And it touches back on what I was trying to say earlier on, but Casey started getting
belligerent. Here's my final point, sorry. If Ireland went to a World Cup, the Republic
Holy
of
fuck,
Ireland,
I'm after getting interrupted now by him and by you.
If the Republic of Ireland went to a World Cup with a manager, say Trapattoni had taken it to a World Cup,
yeah.
and you lost your first two group games and were awful, everyone.
So you mean the last major championship we went to with Trapattoni then?
You're telling me there wouldn't be a debate about whether he should lose his job? And there wouldn't
of
be an over...
There would.
Well, there's not about Hodgson.
That's because the chief executive of the FA... But John Delaney did the exact same thing.
But
John Delaney
wrong.
Came out and backed Trapattoni after the Euros, did he not?
And
then Trapattoni got the fucking bullet.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But my point is that... No, I'm not saying it's okay. What I'm saying is that you've said that all the articles you read beforehand were all building them up, and then all of the articles that you've read since... are shooting them down. Now, I've read a lot of articles that
but it's not shooting Hodgson down. It's shooting the players down.
I stand by that.
The players are getting it full in the face, whereas Hodgson...
In reality, it was a tactical failure. Italy adapted their game to counteract what England tried to do to them.
Yeah.
England did nothing.
No, England should have gone out... Like he half-arsed it.
Yep.
He half-arsed it.
They didn't press.
He put the Liverpool personnel in place and he fucked up because he didn't have two screeners in front of Gerrard, which is what we've had when we were good. He had one. And it was a fucking
shambles.
But
then he shouldn't have put the Liverpool players in place.
But this is at the heart of why he's so very useless. I mean, he is absolutely...
I'm not sitting here arguing. Like, the question was, are we glad that they're gone out of the World Cup? I just said no, I wasn't. I was very, very disappointed.
Look, Steve, I'll be straight with you. This was the first tournament where, if had you removed Hodgson, I would have liked England to do well in. Straight up.
Yeah.
But I could not... I couldn't foresee any set of circumstances that England were going to do well in this tournament. And I thought they'd struggle to get out of the group. And it's fucking proven rightly, because we all know we've sat through Hodgeball. We've sat through what the chap is a spoofer. Mm. He manages by media, right? Whatever the media recommends he should do to the team, he goes and does. Then the media do not have any backlash against him because he's done exactly what they said. If they were then to come out and criticise Hodgson for doing the things that they thought should have been done, they're inherently criticising themselves, and they won't. Because they're all vain bastards. The Henry Winters, the fucking Martin Samuels, the whole lot, they know the game better than anyone else in their mind. Mm. So when they're putting the stuff out and then Hodgson is following what they thought should have been done, they will not then come back out and criticise, because they're criticising themselves and they're also putting their own knowledge of the game down. And this is the symptomatic problem with Hodgson as a football manager, is he has no testicles, he has no fucking... He
That's
goes
a proven
on,
fact, actually.
You may as well put the stretcher to carry the physio off in the dugout once that whistle went, because
his in-game management is abysmal.
His whole management is abysmal because he doesn't manage. He listens to what everyone else says he should do and he follows that.
Which is why, Paul, it's a wonderful thing that he's got these 2 more years, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot of fun to be had here.
I was conflicted about England going out. There's the Liverpool angle, obviously, wanted you know, the Liverpool lads to have, you know, a better crack at the tournament. But like, I really do enjoy the Hodgson sideshow. It's just that, you know, when they, now that obviously they kind of shit hit the fan, they got knocked out, it just, it goes back to, you know, what we had to put up with when he was Liverpool manager, where it's absolutely everybody's fault except Hodgson. Like, this is the sort, like, I remember after Euro 2012, it was sort of Oh, no, fuck that. Doesn't matter. Like, you know, Hodgson came in and he didn't have much time to prepare. World Cup 2014, that's where it's at. That's what we're building towards here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then, like, as soon as that was gone, oh, no. World Cup 2016. Like, this will just go on for as long as Hodgson is alive. Like, yeah.
When the turn comes on Hodgson, I am going to fucking glory in the turn. Because
I think it'll happen before Christmas.
It won't. The wonderful thing about it is, right?
And they've only got to finish runners.
Is that, when people look back at what the journalists have said, right, in the English journalists, particularly in this, they're just going to laugh at the two-facedness, the xenophobic way that they've carried on. Because if that was Fabio Capello, if that was Wenger and Eriksen, and Eriksen said it himself, Eriksen got them to a quarter final, and he was fucking lifted from height. They had pictures of him being turned into vegetables. Yeah. You know, look at Graham Taylor. Look at what they did to Steve McLaren, right? And all of these lads that were there, they weren't the best of buddies with the press the way Hodgson is. And Hodgson is getting a free ride because of that.
It's the English guys you got that make the real comparison. Like you said, Graham Taylor was a turnip, right? McLaren was the Wally with the Brolly, right? They got fucking hammered, right? But Hodgson, no. Hodgson's in the inner circle. He's in that Fleet Street, you know, accepted.
There is a genuine piece, you know, that I am disappointed about, which is the Gerrard angle. You know, I think that
the way he's been hung out to dry, Dave, is, you know, disgusting.
It's disgusting.
It's fucking disgusting.
And the fact that his manager hasn't come in and absolutely hammered that down, but he never will, because he loves throwing fuckers under the bus.
Yeah, listen,
he was poor, though.
He was poor.
But he was poor because of Hodgson.
I think he was hung out to dry.
No, he wasn't poor because of Hodgson.
It's the system.
Steve, I think
that's the system.
System doesn't stop kicking a ball to the fucking player that you're with.
No, but in fairness, that's just the point I was making earlier on. I think he was hung out to dry with the fact that he didn't have that structure.
Look, the reality is, we can argue about whether it was Hodgson or whether it wasn't or whatever. Gerrard did have a poor tournament. The thing I'd say is that Steven Gerrard is probably the best footballer that England have had in the last 10 years. Take it all together, right? The entire package. Probably the best footballer they've had. And he's going to go out like this. So I'm a little bit disappointed about that for him, because I think he genuinely looked like disappointed, you know, to be going out.
Of course he was. Yeah, no, of course he was disappointed. My point is, right, Pandeli, right, take it that he's a poor in-game manager. He's not, but let's just take it that he is. Do you think that Pirlo, with the level of experience and quality that he has, stands by and, you know, plays his game specifically to the way he's being told? Or do you think he adapts his game, watching how the match is going on, with the level of knowledge and experience that he has, and tries to rectify the situation himself? Okay, I'm not talking about being Johnny Big Balls and Johnny Bravo, you know, a la Gerrard versus Chelsea.
But when you've got Danny Welbeck out on one wing and Wayne Rooney running around not sure what he is in the other wing,
I think it works.
Henderson on his own in front of you, you're in trouble, aren't you?
You've got some managers who let you do that.
Exactly.
Other managers that don't.
Exactly.
No manager can stop you when you're on the pitch. The only thing he can do is take you off. So this is my point. This is where...
Or they tell the players to do the opposite of what you're telling them to do.
But I'm not even talking about what you're telling other people to do. I'm talking about what you do yourself, how you change your own positional sense in the game, stuff like that. I'm just saying, unfortunately, I think that is a downside to Steven Gerrard and his game.
I still don't see
Gerrard's poorness being changed because he decides on the pitch that he's not going to completely change the shape of the English team. But Gerrard himself is not going to take it upon himself to say, okay, Hendo, you push on and actually play.
And the point is, he can't. He can't. That's the point, yeah.
Because if he doesn't take Gerrard off, he'll take Henderson off and he'll put somebody else that'll sit in beside Gerrard.
I agree 100%. Like, you know what I mean? If he wanted to set up the way Liverpool have done, he had to play the right players. Yeah. And it's something we spoke about on the pod ages ago in terms of using Lallana for Coutinho and Suarez or Rooney for Suarez if he was going to start with Rooney. Okay. I never would have had fucking Danny Welbeck near the team. Okay. No. Even though Welbeck wasn't the worst, to be fair, he actually wasn't the worst player playing for them. Unfortunately, probably one of our own players was. But, you know, truthfully, you know, if he wanted to set up the way Liverpool have been. But listen, you can't just decide we're going to set up the way Liverpool do and that's going to work. Because what you need then is you need Brendan Rodgers and his team sitting on the bench, implementing it day in, day out in training and pre-game, you know, planning and everything like that. And unfortunately, Steve Peters is decent, but he's he doesn't have the ability to turn Roy Hodgson into Brendan Rodgers. So
I've seen him getting hammered as well, poor old Steve.
Oh, well, he got a lot of credit, so now he's taking a bit of the flack as well, of course.
But he's not quite Eileen Drury, like, to be fair. Paul, Steve was kind of touching on it there about underperforming Liverpool players, and I don't think even Roy Hodgson could be deluded enough to think that his right back had a good tournament, could he? So far, anyway.
It's what we expected, basically, from Johnson. It's what he did basically all season.
Yeah.
Just hesitant on the ball, like, just awful defensively. Like, he actually got the assist for Rooney's goal, didn't he?
Yeah, which was good.
Well, that was kind of like Rooney against Italy, where he was absolutely awful, but kind of came up with an assist for them. But yeah, there was no surprise there at all, really. Like, you could say, like, you maybe expected Gerrard to do better, but, like, you weren't expecting Glenn Johnson to be, like, any better at all. Yeah. He was just Glenn Johnson. He Johnsoned it, basically.
He Johnsoned it. Well, Phil, you were touching this early on, that we're looking around. Maybe it's just me, but I've been actively looking around right backs going, Jesus Christ, who can we get? Looking at this thing as if it's like a sales room, you know? Yeah. And Is there anyone standing? Well,
I tell you straight off, like, I'd be looking at Debussy off front.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I watched him twice, he's been excellent.
If you want to look at the way we expect our fullbacks to play, he plays exactly that way. He bombs on, and he's a good attacking fullback. Mm. He's what Glenn Johnson is set out to be, and he's got his Premiership experience as well. If you want to look at that one, and I think he would fit naturally into that into our side. What annoys me about the Johnson thing is that, again, people are banging on, oh, it's bad form, or like the opening goal for Suarez, the header, right? Cavani comes inside and Johnson just backs off and backs off and backs off and backs off and backs off. Cavani's able to get about 5 touches, look up, see the run of Suarez, and float a chipped cross to the back post. But he should never have even been able to look up.
No. It's phenomenal execution because he's had 5 touches and a look. I'd have a chance at fucking pinging in a decent ball myself with that much time on the ball.
A fullback should not be letting him come in that far. He's nearly in at the D when he plays the fucking...
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's inside the 18 in terms... Yeah. Well, not inside the 18, but he's...
Inside the 18-yard space, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Were you not having flashbacks watching that?
Yeah.
I was just going, fucking hell.
But here's the thing, lads. For all the good things with Brendan Rodgers, if we start the season with Glenn Johnson as our first choice...
And that looks like a blind spot.
It's a massive, massive fault.
And I honestly think, like, I know Johnson has this reputation as an attacking fullback, but I honestly think Flanagan's better on the ball than him. Braver, anyway.
Yeah, like massively underrated.
How many times does he get the ball and he stands still and kind of like there's a pass on and he's looking at it and he's kind of I don't know about that. Mignolet, you have it, like,
yeah.
Like,
and he does the Carragher, put the foot on the ball, turn back and pass it back.
Yeah.
I mean, I wasn't as bad on Johnson as you were last season. I never kind of got as wound up about it, but two things: he looks too big for his body. Like, you know, to be a fullback, he's bulked up so much. I think he's bigger than Skrtel, you know, if you look at the actual mass that he's carrying, which means he's not nimble enough to go in and nick a ball off.
No, nimble is not a word that comes to mind.
Off an attacker. And I think Johnson's going to go. Like, I think he's a last week of the window. We've played our first game. Flanagan started right back, and perhaps we signed another right back, and that's the message. Fuck
off. That's the worry, though, that we don't sign another right back, and he goes in the last week of the window, and then you're thinking, right, John Flanagan and Martin Kelly or Andre Wisdom.
I think there's an argument if you sign Moreno or an attacking left back that you can probably have a slightly less attack, like we did last season, where we had, in theory, an attacking right back and Flanagan as a defensive left back. I think that you could probably start with Flanagan or Wisdom at right back if you sign Moreno on the left.
My worry is that Flanagan doesn't have the same level of season that he had, you know.
There's a drop off.
Which is, and you know what? Same with Sterling. There's nothing wrong if that happens for the age that he is. What's he, 22, 23? That's okay.
Who's Sterling?
No.
Flanagan's 22 most.
22, is he?
Max,
okay. So it just feels like he's been around yonks, you know. But in terms of, that's okay. If he has a little drop off, that's fine. It's not fine if he's our first choice rifle. You know what I mean? And that's what you have to remember. Sterling became a fixture in the first 11 because he played himself in. At the start of last season.
It was November, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was Hull, I think, wasn't it? It was the first real game back.
He didn't have a great game. And then it was Norwich.
Oh, Norwich and then Spurs. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, that's right. He got the tap in against Norwich.
Exactly. That seemed to change his whole season.
Yeah, and then he played Spurs as well, but in that short period of time. But what I'm saying is he didn't start the season with Rodgers thinking he's part of my first team plans. Mm. Yeah. And Rodgers ultimately nearly has to start the season with the same approach to Flanagan. If he plays his way in, or if he keeps his place, brilliant. You know, whoever we sign, let them sit on the bench. I don't care, because there'll be enough games to give each of them games. Mm. But the truth is, In my opinion, he can't be our first choice rifle.
The worry about it is, though, I think that if we're saying Flanagan's not going to start, that I worry that he'll stick with Johnson because he had too much change.
So our own homegrown sort of lads, that, you know, we've had a lot of good kids coming through. Mm. And in fairness, McLaughlin it's two pre-seasons ago he went to America and did really
again,
okay.
I think he goes on loan for a full season.
Yeah, it's too early for him.
We definitely need a senior right back. Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
One senior fullback at least, even free up someone to play at right back. Yeah. I think, like Johnson, I think for us, it's he's almost got this kind of like bogeyman like status where we think he's never going to be gone away, like we're going to go to bed every fucking night. Johnson's going to be in the wardrobe, or he's going to be under the bed grabbing at her feet. Like I don't think he's going to be here. I think, like, realistically,
QPR,
he has to go.
I think Johnson stays, and I think because if the talk about his contract is right, he's on a reduced wage for the last year of his contract.
Yeah, so,
and they keep him purely for that reason. They see him as a senior fullback, and it's up to somebody like John Flanagan or whoever it is to push him out. Mm. Which,
that's worrying.
I do think you're just afraid we're never going to get rid of Johnson, though.
No, I genuinely, right, I know we come in here and we've given out about him probably on about 106 of the 39 podcasts that we've done. But, you know, it's because you're seeing the same things over and over again. And that becomes frustrating. Like, and even when you're looking at a World Cup, you're looking at the same player do the exact same things over and over again, and you're just looking going, am I the only person that's seen this?
It's that Einstein's theory of insanity, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting it to be different.
Someone said to you that for Uruguay's opener, Cavani would cross it and Suarez would head it in, you go, I think I have an idea what. It's like Cavani got the ball out near the left and he was given as long as he wanted to cross it.
Cavani being out on the right side of England defence?
The good news about Johnson staying is we'll always have an agenda item for the pod.
There you go.
We'll always have something to talk about.
15 minutes a week guaranteed.
If Johnson stays, exactly, it's the Johnson corner. Let's talk about him.
What about that
should actually be next season's one. If Johnson stays, rather than having the happiness index, it should be the Johnson index. Yeah. The Johnson index.
What level is Johnson?
Depending on how much he's fucking annoyed us on a Saturday or Sunday, it's how we feel on a Monday for the pod.
How are we feeling that Johnson and his buddies are going to be definitely now going home early and escaping?
I think it's
a good sign for us. Really.
A bit like the Spanish players going back early as well. I think it gives us, you know, a bit extra in terms of our preparations and all in pre-season, and that can't be a bad thing.
Rodgers doesn't have to give them that wanky 2 weeks off.
It's the same. I know it's next. Annoying what we're going to talk about because we can't ignore it in terms of all the speculation that's gone on. But it's the same thing that if Italy win tonight and Uruguay are out, I reckon we'll see a resolution to the Suarez thing in terms of some real, you know, information coming out, whether a bid's going to happen. Yeah. Are not going to happen, happening sooner rather than later, because I can't see us wanting to, and it's like everyone would be in the same boat in this, wanting this to drag on. Although if Madrid are the real suitor that's in here, then it will drag on, because that's Madrid's way. Basically, they look to offload players before they bring Suarez in, as they did with Bale last season. Mm-hmm.
Well, it was an article in the Echo today. It may as well have been an open letter from John Henry. I mean, it was basically,
what was the gist of it, Dave?
Well, basically, it was saying they don't want to sell him. Mm-hmm. He's given no indication that he wants to go. But the money involved to sign him would be... double what Arsenal bid last summer. So you're talking about 80 million, whatever it is. And there's Barcelona and Real in for him, and we're talking to Barcelona about Alexis Sanchez. So that was basically... just to sum it up, we don't want to sell him. He hasn't told us he wants to go. But if he does want to go, he's going to have to pay a fuck ton of money. Plus, we're talking to this really sexy player who we think will come in and take over from him.
I think I read the article as well, and it was probably the most open thing we've read on any speculation from the English press on a Liverpool transfer story this year. Because, again, as Dave said, it sets out more or less what the fee would have to be. Mm-hmm. And it also sets out some of the conditions that both the player and the club would have to be happy with the clubs that are coming in from. Yeah. So it's more or less saying, look, we did put a real clause into his contract this year. If they meet it, and it's one of those two, it's Madrid
he's
or Barcelona,
going to one or two
clubs, potentially even Bayern Munich. I think Munich could be a late bidder in the.
There's
in
no
this
way
one.
It's not cast iron. There's no way they haven't got it totally nailed down after last summer's messing. You know what I mean?
I don't think Munich come in from after signing Lewandowski. I just don't see it.
Well, they signed Lewandowski on a free.
I'm not talking about money. I'm talking about fitting him into the team and into a system.
I think he can fit Suarez into any team in the world. Mm. I think he's that good. Like we're talking about one of the three elite level players of this generation. And I think because of that, but again, remembering that his agent is
Glenn Johnson, one of the other two.
And Paul Konchesky.
I just want to clarify that. So that's a no, though. Okay.
But, given that his brother, Pep Guardiola's brother, is Suarez's agent.
I thought you meant John Suarez. is not much of a footballer, but a fucking deadly man to tile your bathroom.
Juan Suarez's tiles. Tiling and plumbing. You need tiling and plumbing. Come to Juan Suarez. No, but I just think that there could be machinations there. For me, I think an awful lot of the rumours and all that are leaking are potentially even from, you know, us trying to drive the price up so that it's not just the release clause, that you have two teams that are going in there and we're trying to get the best deal out of it. I said it to you guys before, I'm still not sold that he'll necessarily want to go. I think that he's that mad that he may want to stay for one season and play in the Champions League for Liverpool and then go the following season.
I'd be with you on that. I think all of the things he said. Now, listen, I suppose there wasn't a huge amount of indication up until he bid Ivanovic last year that he wanted out, and then it all kicked off from there. But, you know, I think he said enough and talking about how much he can't wait to play the European nights at Anfield. And listen, footballers talk bollocks all the time and say what, I don't necessarily think it's bollocks. I think it's what they're thinking at that very moment in time, but shit changes. You know what I mean? Like it's like somebody sitting talking, you know, they get a call off a recruitment agent and say, you know what I mean? Oh no, listen, I'm not really looking at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then the recruitment agent goes, well, listen, it's paying this and it's with this company and it would involve this, this and this. And they go, well, send me over the spec and I'll have a look. Yeah. And I know because I do it for a living. So, you know what I mean? It's my job to turn people's minds and whatever. So, like, you know what I mean? People don't necessarily have an intention.
Do you know Juan Suarez?
I do, yeah. he just did a bathroom for me a few weeks ago. Lovely job. Unbelievable.
Juan Suarez.
Creme de Marfil on the floor. Oh, unbelievable.
One thing I want to say about this, and it's to do with the money, and it's something that gets on my absolute wick. People talking about money. When would you sell? What would you sell at? Blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, we all just want to watch Luis Suarez playing for Liverpool, don't we?
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter shit.
People can have the argument about, you know, if we get this and this,
I just want to see him playing for us.
Sorry, lads, but at the end of the day, Luis Suarez in your team is 10 times better than Luis Suarez not being in your team. Mm-hmm. Right?
Agreed. I said I'd take 100 million for him last season when we were on the pod one of the nights, just to fucking stir up a bit of debate.
That's
I don't
not
even
like
know
it.
If it was on the pod. Yeah. I think it might have been just in a chat that we were having.
It was just before the ghost poo.
But, you know, the truth is,
first of all, I think Sterling for the whole season rather than for 6 months replaces some of those goals and some of those assists.
Good
show.
Yeah.
Second of all, I think signing Sturridge gives me a bit of hope that we can buy players who will come in and do something for us. And then the third thing is we are in a Champions League. We're in the Champions League. We're a much more attractive proposition. I mean, to your point earlier, I think you said it, the fact that we are even in the conversation for Sanchez, right, is encouraging. Now, Sanchez, for me, feels a little bit like, you know, the stalking horse. He's the guy that we're throwing out there, the name that's out there, whereas actually I'd say we've got three or four in our plan.
Is he this season's Mkhitaryan?
Well, he's better than a Mkhitaryan.
No, but I just mean in terms of the name that was thrown out.
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's the name that people are going, if we lose Suarez, we'll get Sanchez. Whereas I would imagine there's a list of about six or seven players on that. You know, maybe Isco, maybe Morata from Real Madrid, maybe Rodriguez. You know, maybe there's a couple of the Rouse. Or you know, maybe you go to Bayern Munich and you try and get Götze out there or whatever the hell. You know, these different players that... The
really
on
top
that list.
End
top
players.
End players. I just think Sanchez is just the name because we're dealing with Barcelona.
But I think he's good enough to come in.
Oh, listen.
Like, again,
I take
back
him tomorrow.
To like, you know,
his pace is frightening as well.
If Suarez has to go, that's the type of player who comes in and can slot into the team in the position that Suarez played, which is huge as well, because our team was set up to get the best out of Luis Suarez and Daniel Sturridge. Now you take Luis Suarez out of the team. And do you go back to the drawing board with the formation? You don't really, because then you're shifting everyone around again.
I think Sturridge gets you an extra 5-8 goals a season without Suarez in the side, maybe even more.
Yeah,
that's interesting because the team shape changes slightly because
it becomes less focused around Suarez and more about Danny Sturridge.
Probably the whole team scores more.
Well, it comes down to what Suarez, with the numbers he's put out and like the way he fits into our team. Like, if you lost him, then like they could give us 170 million and you might still struggle to replace him. Because, we said that there's not going to be a, like no one's going to come in and reproduce what he did on their own. You're going to have to try and get it out of two players. And then you're coming into, like, one of them gets injured, one of them's out of form or whatever. Like, it's just, like, if Suarez plays with us next season, he could hit 40 goals. And, like, that's what you're looking at trying to replace there.
Yeah. Well, we don't think somebody comes in and replaces Suarez. That's the other thing I'd say. You know what I mean? Maybe let's throw a little optimistic slant on it.
Maybe somebody
does come in and hit a goal a game next season because of the way we play football and the amount of chances we create.
Yeah.
Well, Suarez didn't score a goal again when he landed. So, like, Sturridge is capable of doing it, but he won't do it over
the amount
of matches because of the injuries. So that's why you get two or three players, because unlike any other player in the world as well, that Suarez, this is one thing he has over him. He's never injured.
Yeah.
Even when his knee...
Except for that knee operation.
Which he comes back for after 24 hours. I'm not even sure
he had a knee operation.
Not even.
I reckon they just brought him into hospital for a lollipop and he rolled out in a wheelchair with a little sad head and a hoodie on him.
Ronaldo has tendonitis or something in his knee and is all strapped up the whole lot. Somebody operated on Luis Suarez's knee and he just runs out, gets cramp after 9 minutes. Fuck it, I'll score a header, leaping header.
Did anybody see that cartoon of Suarez versus England? We'll put it up, we'll throw up the link on through the Day Trippers Twitter feed. That's fucking brilliant. It's Suarez, you know, just playing, acting the bollocks against Uruguay, you know what I mean? And he scores, he goes, "Oh, hey Joe, you got too much gel in your hair." And as he's bearing down on goal, and then all of a sudden Joe Hart still goes, he's crying away, and then he smashes in the goal and he goes, "Ha ha, Joe." and then you see him and he goes, "Hey Stevie, pass me the ball Stevie." And Gerard turns around and there's Suarez in the Liverpool jersey. And Stevie goes, "All right, Louis." He heads the ball onto him and then he goes, stupid Slippy G. And he turns and smashes it. Oh, it's fucking, it's so funny. It genuinely is brilliant. I have the link to it on in the WhatsApp.
Before
there.
Putting out the pun, I'll just throw that out tomorrow.
Brilliant. Yeah, it's really, really good. And so apparently there's a ton of them. But go ahead, Dave. Back to a serious point.
Well, the other theory on Suarez.
Actually, Paul was going to make a point.
Oh, go on, Paul.
Order in the sauna bunker.
By the way, to all the people listening, it is fucking roasting in here.
Massive losing Matrice.
It's getting ragged.
I'm sweating like a glass blower's arse here.
We can smell it.
Well, the other theory on losing Suarez is
Paul just wants to
you don't replace is that you take, say you get 50 million of Sanchez, you take the 50 million and you upgrade Coutinho and Henderson and get more goals from them, because actually that's where we need to improve, because there's no guarantee even if Suarez stays he has the same season next season, right? There's no none of these are guarantees. So if you're looking for obvious areas for improvement, you'd say Coutinho and Henderson's goal return, they've got to add 5 or 6 goals each. Mm-hmm. To what they did last season. So you go and replace the midfielders.
The funny thing is, I actually think it could be easier to get 4 or 5 goals from Henderson than it will be from Coutinho.
I agree.
I think Coutinho plays off the cuff. He's probably a harder man to coach into what you want to do. And I think Henderson next season, you might actually see a better goal return.
But you clearly need to read more broadsheets, because Henderson is shit and Gerrard is shit and Hodgson is the light. And on that note... Finally then, some admin. Big shout to Astro Park as ever. If you want to play 5 or 7 side football, this is the place to be. So get on to them and book your game on www.astropark.ie. There's a scary amount of excellent content currently on the website, including a wonderful look at the Champions League by Connor Thompson and a new one up from Jagdish Singh on Wednesday. There's also an open letter from David Hartery to Roy Hodgson, so get on that and give it a read. And the site, of course, www.lfcdaytrippers.com. We haven't forgotten the best of listeners' questions, and now that Casey's back from his sojourn in Italia, he might bother his arse to actually compile it. So we may or may not record next week, depending on how excited we get and what goes on LFC-wise. Your day trippers tonight were Dave Thomas, Paul Brennan, Stephen Daly, Phil Casey, and myself, Trev Denny. What's that, fella?
What?
I don't understand that. What does that mean?
ICA Tobago.
ICA Tobago, what does it mean?
It's this.
Oh, it's the name of the song. Okay, right. I thought you were suggesting I say this.
No shame.
No shame.
Que
no
que é isso? Nossa.
Who's that?
I say Tobago. I say Tobago.
Where do you find this shit, man?
Podcast team.
Don't make the donkey. Okay, you recording there?
I am recording.